This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. It's 7:35 in the morning, and in about half an hour, we're going to be having The Breakfast Grill, where Sharitz Abdullah speaks with Rebecca T. She's Managing Director of iStone Group Berhad. Now, iStone Group is based in Johor, and they design, manufacture and modify specialised automation machines. And ahead of their listing on the ACE market tomorrow, Sharitz will be speaking with Rebecca about entrepreneur and Managing Director Rebecca T on their plans to propel growth. Now, in the meantime, China's economy has slowed to the weakest pace since quarterly data began in 1992 amid US-China trade tensions, although monthly indicators have provided signs of emerging stabilization. GDP rose 6.2% in the April-June period compared to a year earlier.
And Donald Trump, of course, in a tweet, has hailed this as a success in the trade war with China, saying that the US tariffs are having a major effect on companies waiting to leave China for non-tariffs countries. I wonder which country that is.
I wonder what he's going to tweet tomorrow.
Now, for some analysis on the latest economic data coming out of China, we turn to Yu Su, an economist with the Economist Intelligence Unit based in Beijing. Thank you for joining us this morning. Good morning. Did the latest GDP data meet your expectations, considering more than 6% growth is relatively decent compared to other major markets? But are these signs of trouble for China?
Morning. Actually, those GDP data are in line with our expectations, because the slowing down is mainly felt in the secondary industry as a result of domestic demands, plus the escalation between of the U.S.-China trade war in early May. But service industry is quite stabilized thanks to a stronger retail sales and infrastructure spending growth. But actually, if you look at the key indicators such as industrial output data, retail sales data, which actually has grown much stronger than our expectations. And the industry output data accelerated to 6.3% up from 5% last month, driving by a very strong performance in auto manufacturing, transportation equipment, and electronic goods manufacturing. And the most eye-catching part is retail sales, which increased by nearly double digits, nearly 10%. However, this figure, to our understanding, does not really imply strong improvement in domestic demand, because the strong performance in June is mainly due to the car dealers slashing prices to clear inventories as new emission regulation standards started to take effect in July 1st. And this means consumers might front-loading their purchase, and retail sales is very likely to get back to the original trend in the coming months. Investment is remaining stabilized with a slight improvement, and the pickup in infrastructure spending helps to offset the deceleration in industrial and property investment. But the overall outlook for investment is quite positive, I would say, because bond issuance of local governments has started to pick up, and the central government now allow local government to use the proceeds of special bonds to fund for major infrastructure project. That means a widening of financing channels.
Yeah. The government issued some stimulus to prop up the economy earlier part of this year, for example, cutting taxes. How far do you see this kind of stimulus go, and how to what extent can it support growth in China?
Yes, at the beginning of the year, central government announced a couple of stimulus measures, for example, cutting value-add tax cut and also cutting the fees for enterprises. But actually, it will take some time to actually feel the impact of this stimulus measures. But we do observe a slight improvement in secondary industry industrial profits in the latest month's data. But I think it will take longer periods, for example, like in Q3 and Q4, to really felt the impact of this VAT cut started to kick in. But on the other side, at the beginning of this year, central government also increased fiscal deficit and also speed up the issuance of special bonds and other local government bonds. So this has been already reflected in the latest infrastructure investment. So I think the impact of these measures will be much stronger in the coming months.
And Sue, you mentioned about retail spending. So my question is, how far are we down in creating what China wanted, which is the new economic model based on middle-class consumption?
Yes, I think if you look at the retail sales data in late in this month, so much of the spending are really in car, not only car sales, but also house appliances and the furnitures and the and decoration materials. This is actually out of a lag effect of booming property sales in early months. But actually, if you look at lots of the news here in China, lots of the household appliances spending are actually on the smart household appliances. So that really reflects consumption upgrading in this sector. So, and also producers are very actively adjusting their productions, and in order to meet the rising demand of the middle class. But my concern is really at the income growth side. So if you look at the income growth, both at urban household and rural household, so the latest data shows really weakening in this income growth. So it's, if you look at the urban income growth, it's even slower than the national GDP growth. So my concern is really at the income side, because of this U.S.-China trade war and lots of uncertainties in the market. So it's really hurt the business confidence. So manufacturing and private sector are not really investing. So that would mean a decreasing in demand in labor demand. So that will probably hurt household incomes and also hurt consumer confidence.
Thank you so much, Sue. And that was you, Sue, an economist with the EIU based in Beijing. And she did highlight, so because you asked her a question about some of the stimulus measures that Beijing has taken already at the start of the year. And she did highlight that these will take some time still to come into effect, but they may be starting to see some growth in that respect.
I think it's really a balancing act right now, because there's only so much you can do domestically with the backdrop of the trade tensions happening. And even if a truce is being called right now by Donald Trump, a lot of companies are already taking steps to prepare for the long term, right? How to diversify their investments, their manufacturing plant outside of China.
Which is why the new economic model in China is so much going to be driven by consumption, because I think they could foresee that manufacturing, even before the trade war tensions, was ebbing, because costs in China has actually increased.
Now, moving away as well from quarterly GDP to another type of quarterly report, the earnings season in the U.S. has started with Citigroup reporting results. U.S. consumer banking gave the group a boost in the second quarter, helping it overcome slow trading and corporate activity. Citigroup said its second quarter net income rose 7% on year. Quarterly profit was $4.8 billion, up about 6.7% on year.
So this is the first of the big banks reporting in the United States. And I think that a lot of these results have highlighted the importance of trading income. Trading income is growing over there. But the usual complaint is that a lot of the monetary stimulus, like the quantitative easing, is not finding its way to the rest of the economy. Mm. So I'm just wondering whether there is some growth in corporate lending.
The question also is that you can see that the banks in America and even globally are changing their business model, because they know that trading income or corporate activity is something that you can't control, right? That that keeps moving up and down. And if you are a company, you want to see consistency of earnings, which is why even the likes of Deutsche Bank are going back to their roots and doing more commercial or even consumer banking, which is the case, I think, for Citibank. So they're very proud of the fact that this, for the consumer bank segment, this has been the best result, quarterly result since 2013.
Yeah, and which is notable because a consumer is their growing is a growing business, but it's not their bread and butter. And you mentioned trading incomes, Shanning. Now, trading revenue for Citibank was up 4% to $4.1 billion, but that did include a one-off gain on the bank's stake in a trading platform. Without that gain, Citigroup's core trading revenue would have declined 5% on year, so it would have been the third straight quarter of declines in the trading unit. Overall, banks have also warned that despite the record stock markets we're currently seeing in the US, clients have remained cautious and aren't paying their banks to help them put on big new bets.
I think the banking sector has done very well over the first half of this year. I think it's up about 20%. And Citi is also one of those banks that has rebounded from the bottom. What are the valuations right now? I think it's around 1.2 times price to book, right, for Citi?
Yes, if you look at it from the Bloomberg numbers, the price book is actually even lower. It's only 0.9 times versus the average in America, which is 1.23 times.
Okay, so Citi is actually trading at a discount.
Yes, partially because there is some argument that they haven't completely done their business model to transform the bank in totality, because in the past it was very much a bank that was investment based, right? Investment banking based. And they want to shift away from that to more commercial and consumer bank. But that transformation is not complete, which is why they're given a valuation of 0.9 times versus, let's say, the average. So if you look at some of the banks which are very focused on retail, their valuations are much higher at maybe 1.6 times. And this is something that we even see in Malaysia, for example. Mm-hmm. If we bring it back home, the bank on the street which has the highest valuation is Public Bank, does hardly any investment banking.
Probably the most expensive bank in the world.
Yeah, it is actually currently 2.17 times price to book.
Yeah, do we know how long it would take Citigroup to complete the transformation that you described, actually?
I guess it's a never-ending, ongoing process.
All right, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.